It's time for Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3, brought to you by the Hippocrates Health Institute in West Palm Beach. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org. Now here are the hosts of Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates, Anna Maria and Brian Clement.
This is Health, Happiness, and Healing with Anna Maria.
And Brian Clement, Hippocrates Wellness. Nice to be back with all of you again. I hope you're in a restful position, or if you're driving, it's slow and safe. And today we have an extraordinary show that's two parts. And we have a man on that we've had on before, Frank McKinney. That's quite impressive to me that, you know, we've often heard the story, rags to riches, you know, the kid that had no advantages, the girl that had no advantages, the boy, worked their way out of that, broke through. And I don't think we're ever sick of hearing that story. Mm-hmm. And whenever we find people that are exceptional, extraordinary, not better than or bigger than the average human, they're just living at a human level. They just reached the level that we all should be at that point. They have these stories. So Frank McKinney is one of these people. And so, Frank, give us a little remembrance of what it was like when you were a kid growing up and how tough you had it. You have to go through those tough years with us.
Well, listen, I'm glad to be back. I'm sorry I couldn't be in studio with you. As you know, we've kind of spent more time in North Carolina now, but this is just as good, we'll say. We'll save the visit for the next time. So, listen, I'm just a corn-fed country boy from Indiana. I was born and raised in a little town called Carmel, Indiana, on a farm, oldest of six. I had four sisters and a brother. I went to four high schools in 4 years, and it wasn't because my father was in the military. He was a banker. It was because I was asked to leave one high school after the next, until I finally graduated from a high school that was run by Benedictine monks. A reform school. The problem with sending me to a reform school, or anybody who needs reforming, is you're there with a bunch of like-minded individuals, mm-hmm. a bunch of other delinquents. So it was a wonderful time. My parents made a huge mistake sending me there. But anyway, I squeaked out of there with a 1.8 GPA. I spent seven different stints in juvenile detention before I turned 18. So my parents, you know, being the oldest of six and setting a horrible example for my younger brother and four sisters, they basically said it's time to send you on a plane with a one-way plane ticket and get you out of here so we can make sure we're paying attention to your siblings properly and you're not having a bad influence over them. So with that one-way plane ticket, a $50 bill, and a duffel bag with everything I could pack into it, I landed in South Florida at 18 with that 1.8 GPA.
What year was that?
1982.
So your parents got so sick of you, and I don't blame them. My parents were probably at the same level. I wasn't a delinquent. At least they didn't catch me.
You moved to Florida, too, around that time.
Yeah. But look at that. That sounds pretty tough. Mom and Dad, take him to the airport, give him a couple of bucks, and say, off you go. And he's going to be 1,500 miles away. So what happened when you landed and your feet got on the ground? Other than the fact that the weather was nice, what were your thoughts?
You know what, Brian? Turn the clock back to when you were 18. I wasn't kicking and screaming on the way to the airport. I was leaving cold Indiana to go to Palm Beach. Yeah. And I'm watching Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous on TV.
I remember that.
And I get to land right in the middle of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Only this isn't a TV show. It's real.
It is real. So, yes.
Yeah, I mean, besides the weather, there were girls here. It was you know, I was a maintenance worker on a golf course, so I got to be out in the sun all day. My parents thought that I might come here, be scared of being on my own, and turn my life around and then come, you know, running home with my tail between my legs. I never went back. I mean, it's 4 years later. I just decided to, you know, make a life here. I went back, of course, to visit. But listen, if you've ever met anybody from the Midwest, I left in the Midwest, but the Midwest never left
You're
me.
Right. Yeah, there's something good about it, something core values that are there.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, so when I first landed, listen, I might believe in the welfare system and you know, the entitlement programs out there, but I don't believe in the welfare mentality. Yeah. I was really proud to have a job digging sand traps on a golf course, earning $180 a week with other maintenance workers. Matter of fact, I earned the nickname the White Haitian. And that's kind of why I'm so involved in Haiti now, you know, 20, 30 years later. And we'll get to that in a minute. But I furnished my apartment out of Woolworth. This was a store, for those of you who are not old enough to remember, that was around before Walmart came around.
Right.
That's
business.
Right.
It was a five and dime, and that's about all I had left after taxes and, you know, getting paid $4 an hour. It was a $5 bill and a dime. I furnished that apartment with four other maintenance workers. And to me, it was like a slice of heaven, Brian. I'm independent. I'm on my own. I'm making just enough money to go to 7-Eleven, buy a six-pack, and drink a beer, and tie the little plastic loop around my belt loop and walk home. Yeah. You know, that was my idea.
What do you think made you so angry and so, you know, antisocial as a child? And it's, you know, I often wonder these things, because obviously you were a very bright kid and you were independent. So what do you think did that to you? Your brothers and sisters were fine and everything else?
And I wouldn't say I was angry at all. I mean, I do a lot of talks to you know, at detention centers, and even consoling parents who think they just have this incorrigible child. I just had a whole bunch of misplaced energy.
Okay.
And I had a very destructive outlet for this need for, basically my therapist nowadays, not, you know, the last 10 years, has said, you were always addicted to excitement. It was unfortunate that when you were a child, it took a very destructive form. So, you know, I, like Freud and other psychiatrists, believe that we don't change after the age of between 4 and 12, our core personalities are formed.
That's right.
I never changed, Brian. I just found a constructive outlet for what was a destructive tendency. Yeah. I was always a happy kid. I was, being brought up in the 80s. I wore white leather pants to class. You know, I mean, it was a good time. Always happy. But I think the fact that when I chose to apply myself in two subjects. One was creative writing, and I've written 8 books now in 6 different genres. And the other was math, because I knew someday I was going to count a lot of money. So you better learn math. And I've enjoyed the creative writing, or else without those two grades, I would have had a far less than a 1.0 CPA. But once I found the constructive outlet for what had been a destructive tendency, you know, being addicted to stealing cars and holding up convenience stores and selling drugs, anything, I never did it for the car. I never did it for even the money. I did it because it was exciting.
Right.
But for 30 plus years, Brian, I created, built, and sold oceanfront spec homes with an average selling price of over $14 million. I did 44 of them. So I still got my kind of adrenaline rush, only with adrenaline drip. And I didn't know whether I was going to eat out of a dumpster or eat at Ruth Chris Steakhouse. You know, to me, that was very exciting, and it allowed for me to make a good deal of money while never really having to change. I just redirected that.
Well, thank God when you were a kid, they didn't have the big book of 750 psychiatric disorders, because they would have labeled you with 1, 2, or 3, and before you know it, they would have drugged you to the point where you would have had all of that enthusiasm knocked the heck out of you.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to talk about how contagious it can be once you fall in love with life.
How are you feeling? Wellness awaits you right here in West Palm Beach. Hippocrates Wellness Institute has been transforming lives for over 50 years. Located on 60 lush acres, the Hippocrates Wellness Institute can reverse chronic disease, help you lose weight, increase your longevity and immunity. Call for your consultation and tour today, 561-471-8876. That's 561-471-8876. 8876 for Hippocrates Wellness Institute. Now back to health, happiness, and healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org. Now here are the hosts of Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates, Anna Maria and Brian Clement.
This is Health, Happiness, and Healing with Brian
and Anna Maria Clement, and we're here with Frank McKinney, who is, he's called a real estate rock star.
Eight books he authored, and 4 genres.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know, if the childhood would have been today, where psychiatry has
completely gone off the rails, they don't diagnose anything, but they make up 750 disorders. He would have been ADD, ADHD, dyslexic. What about that? Imagine it was 1990s or 2000, or the people today that are being told, dope your kids up with a drug.
Yep.
Talk about that.
Okay, I'm gonna tell you exactly my opinion and theory on that. So indeed, I had, or maybe even still have, ADHD, ADD, OCD, ODD. And in my book, you put it all in a shake in the morning, and you push frappe, and that's who I am. I mean, what most people would see, parents, professionals, I mean, psychiatrists or psychologists seeing as disorders, I see as gifts. Yeah. If I didn't have, let's say, OCD,
right,
I wouldn't fold every single piece of toilet paper in the 14 bathrooms in a $50 million spec house to a perfect diamond tip point, because I know that the ultra wealthy person who's going to buy that house is going to notice those kind of details.
And why? Because they have the same disorder, thank God.
Well, it's a gift. Let's call it what it is. It's a gift. I mean, the oppositional defiant disorder. I'm not going to do things conventionally. That's where the money's made. Yes. I mean, really, if you're going to follow convention, you're just going to follow that line into either the unemployment line or into the welfare line. Yes. I wanted to, you know, turn those gifts, or the diagnosis that are really gifts, into something that worked for me. So I don't hide or run from that. I think, you know, for those who follow me on social, I talk about some of the things that I likely would have been diagnosed with and how they've worked for me. So don't, if you have a child that has ADD, listen, we all have a form of AD, not the D, ADD. It's not a disorder. Yeah. With the way technology's flying today, we all have attention deficit.
Absolutely.
Yes. We need free on that. Mm-hmm. We all have that. So, but what does that mean if you have ADHD? I'm able to focus on one thing and monomaniacally focus on one thing. And, you know, look at what it's done for me in my professional career, my writing career. So yeah. When I go to talk at even like a recovery center, people graduating from a treatment center, most of those people have a synapse or two that society would feel is a little bit off. Mm-hmm. And I say, good for you. It's a gift. Find a constructive outlet for whatever put you in here in this recovery center in the first place. The good news is you don't have to change. You got two things you can do. Forget changing. It's too much pressure. You can't change. We're not going to change.
Well, your mantra, Frank, has been don't change, channel. And I think if we could just do more of that.
Redirect or reignite. Redirect, yes. Reignite. Redirect, reignite. Good. Redirect meaning something, in my case, it was something very destructive. I redirected into something constructive. Yeah. Some people have lived under, you know, these dreams and goals that have been suppressed and repressed because of a horrible childhood. Time to reignite. Reignite those things. Don't fall under the pressure of trying to change. Because unless you're listening to this and you're 12 years or younger, I got news for you. You're not going to change. Yeah, you can redirect and reignite, but you ain't changing.
But that's right. Backed by hardcore science. Mm-hmm. They changed that story in 85 years, so you know that. So you have an irreputable personality in you. So you can either take that and say, oh, what a burden it is. It's hard. This is why I'm not successful. I'm unhappy. I have bad marriages. I can't get a job. I don't make any money. Or you can say, isn't that an extraordinary opportunity? I'm going to be my maximum best to prove that I can do everything I dream of.
I think, Frank, you opened your eyes pretty early in life for what you wanted. And that's few.
That is very few. Yeah. Today, I'm talking 80-year-olds today.
Don't give me credit. I remember, let's go back. 1.8 GPA. All I knew, Anna Maria, was I was intoxicated by this lifestyle of rich and famous. Coming from Indiana to Florida,
yeah.
I was, listen, Brian, when we were 18, 19, 20, we were consumeristic, we were materialistic, right. And even egotistic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I wanted the things that these people that I saw in South Florida had, but how was I going to get them with no money, no network, no education, no friends?
Right.
And, you know, and so I went to work as that maintenance worker on a golf course. Eventually, I became a maintenance worker on the tennis courts, mm-hmm. which led me to become a tennis pro, making $100,000 a year as a teaching pro, which led me to meeting very wealthy people. I was teaching, you know, how to hit a better forehand and backhand, too, who taught me, in turn, a little bit about real estate, and that's what got me to buy my first crack house, which was what it was.
You actually bought a crack house?
Yeah, and we're not talking crack foundation. We're talking crack cocaine. Crack maybe the foundation was crack. But that was my first house. It was a $50,000 crack house in a bad part of town. But that day that I bought that, Brian, I walked in the front door of that house. It had used condoms, used needles, mattresses, drug paraphernalia. It smelled like death.
Oh, God.
I was wearing a mask before a mask were even thing walking in that front door. But that day, I became a real estate artist. That very day, I decided, I took that yellow pad of paper out, and I made that place the nicest little crack house on the block when I got the crack.
Now, you said something I've never heard before, but it resonated with me and probably the listeners. A real estate artist. You never consider yourself a real estate agent, but a real estate artist.
Well, I don't sell other people's property. So what I create, I sell. I'm the one who designs it. I build it. I sell it. I don't do it for, like, I wouldn't do it for you and Anna Maria. Mm-hmm. I build it on speculation.
Yeah.
So like Van Gogh, Renoir, Monet paint two-dimensional paintings. I create three-dimensional art you could live in. Mm. And that has insulated me from, like, you know, maybe my personality wouldn't be the best to work for a couple, a rich couple, for 3 years building their dream home. That just wouldn't work for me. Mm. But so let's, you know, take that Van Gogh, Renoir, Monet example. If you could live in a three-dimensional art created by an artist such as the two-dimensional artist I just referenced, wouldn't you want to do it? And so that gift, I call it my professional highest calling, designing, building, and selling beautiful houses on the ocean, is something that when I was USA Today back in like 92 or 93, when I did one of my first oceanfront homes, they said, this man is a real estate artist.
No kidding.
I jumped on it.
Wow.
Because I always wanted to like sculpt or paint or sing or play an instrument, but I really couldn't. What I can do is create three-dimensional art. So that is the moniker, the name I've went by for, you know, 30-some years now.
So let me ask you this. It must have been perplexing and difficult for you because you didn't know how to draw lines. You weren't an architect. As you pointed out, they pushed you out of school. You almost had to be flunked out of school. How do you do that? How do you sit down and do something that an architect spends a decade or more to learn how to do?
So for the first 5 years of my career, Brian, I didn't do a house worth more than $100,000. I did a bunch of small houses in really rough parts of town, but I became really good at the craft of real estate, not the business,
right. But
the craft of real estate. Mm. My margins went from about 7% to 25%, so I got good at the business side of the craft of real estate. I jumped from a $100,000 house in a rough part of town to a $2.2 million house.
Wow.
There was nothing in between. So what I had at that point was I had built the confidence in my belief, in my understanding of what the ultra wealthy might want in a home before they knew they wanted it.
Yeah.
And how did I build that confidence? Over hundreds of smaller transactions, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, believing that if I put $75,000 into a house and sold it for $100,000, well, what's the difference between putting $750,000 into a house and selling it for $2 million? It's the only difference is a zero. The difference between $75,000 and $750,000 is a zero. And so to me, I was afraid every day. I guess I still am afraid every day of my life, but I didn't let that fear stop me. You know, and so when we started going up in price point, the scariest day in my life is when I pulled myself off the tennis court at $100,000 a year and started buying selling and flipping crack houses. I mean, flipping wasn't a thing that was done outside of gymnastics back when I was doing real estate. Nobody was doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
well, we're going to take a break now, but Frank McKinney is expressing what all of you really are oppressing and holding down, that his spirit, his contagious, wonderful energy is basically something you have. And hopefully when we get back this segment, Frank's going to tell us how to unlock it. And next week, tell you how to blow the thing up and be able to heal yourself even after surgery within days. Be right back.
How are you feeling? Wellness awaits you right here in West Palm Beach. Hippocrates Wellness Institute has been transforming lives for over 50 years. Located on 60 lush acres, the Hippocrates Wellness Institute can reverse chronic disease, help you lose weight, increase your longevity and immunity. Call for your consultation and tour today, 561-471-8876. That's 561-471-8876 for Hippocrates Wellness Institute. Now back to health, happiness, and healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org. Now here are the hosts of Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates, Anna Maria and Brian Clement.
This is Health, Happiness, and Healing with Brian
and Anna Maria Clement at Hippocrates Wellness. And we're here with Frank McKinney. And he is coming out with a new book called Adversotology. Tell us, Frank, what this is.
Adversotology. What a fantastic name that is.
Yes.
So, yeah, adversotology, of course, it's a made-up word, but we know what theology is. We know what geology is. Well, adversotology is the study of adversity.
Yes.
And the subtitle is Overcoming Adversity When You're Hanging On by a Thread.
Oh.
So that adversity comes in four forms: physical, meaning illness; financial; relational; or spiritual. And on March 11th, 2020, the day the country was shut down with COVID, I was diagnosed with chronic myeloid leukemia. So my magic carpet ride, the guy who middle name was Midas, everything I touched turned to gold. I was covered in Teflon. That magic carpet was flying along at 200 miles per hour. That was ripped out from underneath me with what was, from my doctor, a veiled death sentence.
Yeah.
I told nobody. I didn't tell my brothers and sisters. I told five people: my mother, my spiritual advisor, my therapist, my wife and daughter. Those are the only five people who knew that I had this life-threatening disease until this book came out. Why did I wait? Because what I applied to overcome that physical adversity, basically a death sentence, I wanted to wait to see if it worked. Like, if it didn't work, then I'm dead and nobody's going to buy the book because it didn't work. So I take the word adversity, which is a nine-letter word. The book has nine chapters. Each chapter, the first chapter, A, accept. So when we have an adversity, we got to learn to get our head out of the sand, because the only thing that sticks out of the sand when your head's in the sand is what? You know, your ass to get kicked. Get your head out of the sand. Accept the fact you have this financial, physical, relational, spiritual adversity. D, chapter is disidentify. You know, giving, I don't want to go through the whole book here, but not giving your adversity any energy. I didn't even call it by name. My doctors were forbidden to write it on any charts. When I'm in the room, don't use the word. I completely snuffed that energy out so that my body no longer recognized, my subconscious no longer recognized it as a viable intruder.
Right.
And over an 18-month period, I completely rid my body of that disease. And I said it once, I won't say it again. And I decided, hey, look, let's write a plan. Let's write this 9-step plan for others. And I back tested it on financial adversity I had and even relational adversity. Listen, I know, Brian, you and Anna Maria, being married as long as you've been married, I've been married 33 years, you're going to have adversity in your marriage. Mm-hmm. How do you get through these things when you're hanging on by a thread? So that's the thesis of adversotology.
Well, I mean, you know, I think your blueprint for life applies building successfully homes, or healing a catastrophic disease, or 1 week after you have a knee surgery, being out running and carrying heavy. So tell us about that. Besides the fact that you wiped the heck out of a catastrophic disease that kills almost everybody, now you rip your knee and you're running out there with a tire. How do you do that? Why do you do that?
Well, again, the answer, the long answer we found in the book, but let me go to the third chapter, which is the V chapter, A-D-V-E-R-S-I-T-Y, the V chapter. V stands for violate fate. Violate fate. So here's what that means in short. Many well-intentioned people in your life, your advisors, your doctors, your lawyers, will project a fate upon you that they feel is best.
Yeah.
Or they feel will end up, you will end
up. They impose
up
their
way.
Limitations on you, Frank. Mm-hmm. They impose their limitations on you.
Even if it's a lawyer who's helping you with a divorce, like they're projecting what they feel is.
Yeah.
And these are well-intentioned people. These aren't malicious people. They could be your mother, for that matter.
Yeah.
I choose to violate fate. And that fate, and create my own, you know, change the mind of fate itself. So when it came to my knee surgery, was all adversities are either consequential, meaning we brought them on ourselves, or they're innocent. You know, your child gets hit by a car or something. My knee surgery was a result of a consequential adversity. I've run 40,000 miles. I have 40,000 miles on my knees. So being an ultra marathon runner,
40,000 miles on your knee. I never. You actually know that you ran 40,000 miles?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
I know how many miles I run per year, and I know how many years I've been running.
So. Oh, so, my God.
That would be
so
car,
I have no,
change of car tire.
No cartilage.
See, you have to be no ADD to do that stuff. I mean, this guy's fantastic.
Exactly. So I go in, I find a doctor who's, I did both knees at the same time.
Wow.
I said, listen, I'm going to do this. We're going to do it at the same time. And I found a doctor who would at least give me that glimmer of hope that I could run someday. By the procedure he used, he actually used a robot to do it. So a week, I wasn't running a week out. I had my crutches and I had a harness on. I was going very slow, dragging this tire. I'm 6 weeks out as of today, and today was the first day I could run.
Oh, wow.
So I walk a mile, I run a quarter, walk a mile. And I'm actually walking faster than I'm running, believe it or not. But that will turn. So by violating fate, listen, did I do what my doctor told me not to do? Absolutely not. I brought my PT person, for Lauren, who booked this interview. I brought him out to the bridge, the Linton Boulevard Bridge, at 4 a.m. where I do my training. And I wanted him to watch me to make sure I wasn't doing anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I bring in the experts. Believe me, just like in business, I can't draw a line straight, but I can build a beautiful mansion. I bring in the expert. But if you're going to project a fate upon me that I don't think is the fate I want, then I'm going to violate that fate, and I'm going to get out there and drag a tire a week after double knee replacement.
Yeah, but that's if you go to a physician or a chiropractor or anybody who says, look, we can fix this. Every cell in your body heard that, and you're going to fix it.
Yeah, but if they say the opposite, which is most often, this is horrible, it's bad, you can't do it, you can never walk again, bang, 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 bang. That encodes into your genetics, too.
Oh, yeah. Never forget.
It sure does. And I'll tell you what, Brian, you and I are close to the same age. And one thing I don't do anymore, I only work with people that I collaborate well with.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fight your energy. Like I had an ortho who is used to seeing 80-year-old patients who can't even get to their, into the driveway to get their mail. And he started treating me like that. We'll get you to the end of your driveway. I'm like, no, you're going to get me to the end of the 100-mile race. So we're done. I'm not working with you. I want to collaborate. I want people that have passion.
Yes.
They have purpose. I'm not going to work with you. I don't care what you do in life if you don't have those passion, purpose, and a collaborative mind.
Well, that's right. Next week when we come back, we're going to give you more tools. And Frank McKenney has the ability to do that. You just spoke about his new book, Adversetology. And beyond that, we can help you liberate yourself from your own preconceived notions of limitation. Be back next week with Frank.